Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Nothing Impossible on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Welcome in, Michael Calhoun and Travis Sheridan with you from our studios here in St. Louis, talking about local innovation.
Today we're going to even talk about local innovation with global impact, so this is kind of fun.
We're going to get into Global Hack and what they're doing to help the, well, their last Global Hack was about helping the homeless community, creating apps and software to help the homeless. And their next Global Hack is going to be about the immigrant community. So we're going to talk with Matt Minetti of Global Hack coming up.
And we're also going to talk to Don Rubin from BioSTL and Global STL. See how we did that? His recent trip to Europe and what's happening as they continue to find these foreign companies that want to establish a North American headquarters in St. Louis.
And Ginger Imster from the St. Louis Economic Development Partnership also on those trips will give us a little bit of perspective as to how they came about and what does all of this mean? Foreign ag tech and plant science and life science companies deciding to put their North American hubs in St. Louis. But first, we're going to talk some baseball.
It's always a good day to talk baseball.
Literally baseballs, like though. Not the sport, but like the object. A global company, Rawlings, that is based here in St. Louis, but has had several parent companies over the years, including Rubbermaid. Did you know that Rawlings was owned by Rubbermaid?
That's really towing the rubber on that one, right?
Oh, good one. Good one. Well, so they've been sold or are going to be sold to a private equity firm and Major League Baseball partnering to buy Rawlings. And so we called up Art Chu, who's a former executive at Rawlings, and now he runs Stadia Ventures, the investment firm for startups. And I asked him, Art, what do you think about this deal?
I can't overstate I shouldn't say surprise, but the interest in the whole MLB involvement, because usually, you know, Rawlings has to bid against competitors for licensing rights within certain categories to Major League Baseball. And here it looks like MLB is picking sides. And if they're the side that you picked on, that's pretty good. I think the optics right now of the deal seem pretty favorable.
MLB picking sides and picking Rawlings.
Yeah, owning a piece of one of their equipment suppliers. Pretty unusual. We also talked with Art Chu about, as a Rawlings alum, about how the company has tried to stabilize itself lately. They've gotten out of the football helmet business and other sports, and they've really doubled down on baseball and softball. So that's why this deal makes so much sense. And in terms of where they are in, physically, they're in an office park in West County right now. But, you know, you drive to Louisville and you see the world's biggest baseball bat, Louisville Slugger.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
The museum there, their headquarters are very public facing. And so the question to Art was, could Rawlings, as some have suggested, pick up from a nondescript office park and instead build a very public facing headquarters in where else but Ballpark Village? Here's what Art had to say about that.
I think people would always love to see that. I think that the core people, the core group there are, you know, loyal St. Louisans. They're loyal to baseball. You know, the way the sport is part of the culture here. I think that people there would love to see it all get tied together and to have a bigger influence within the city. It's always been a matter of dollars and cents. Getting the right lease and the right opportunity and the right growth. But I think if they can make that happen, especially with new ownership, they can make that happen. I think the city would love it. I think the company would love it.
Well, we've seen so many of these retail places around ballparks help expand the fan experience, and it makes sense for a company like Rawlings to be in that mix and selling a lot of souvenir baseballs.
And also, companies are choosing to locate. I mean, the new Atlanta Braves Stadium has skyscrapers just beyond its outfield walls with Comcast offices and that sort of thing. So PwC moving to Ballpark Village, Rawlings, perhaps. Now, Art, as we mentioned, is also the one of the partners at Stadia Ventures, investing in sports technology-related startups, and one of their demo days is next week.
Well, Stadia has our demo day coming up for a spring cohort, and we have announced also that this fall we'll be partnering up with the city of Frisco, Texas, and St. Louis, so combining the two with a new focus on esports. So the whole idea of esports and the technology, innovation, and entrepreneurship that goes into that category means there's a lot of investors that want to invest in that area, a lot of industry that wants to learn more about esports. It's this whole new professional leagues that are popping up around esports, and so we're going to have a cohort of startups that are focused on esports.
So from global sports to global hacks, we're going to take a quick break, and up next is Matt Minetti with Global Hack.
Now, back to Nothing Impossible on Gangnam OX.
That is the show. Michael Calhoun and Travis Sheridan with you, and let's talk about Global Hack.
Yeah, we have Matt Minetti, Executive Director of Global Hack, in studio, and there's two things that we want to talk about. First of all, Global Hack, about a year or so, I guess it was a year ago, did the Hack for Homelessness focus?
2016.
2016,
yeah,
wow.
It's
okay.
Hard to believe that it's like, yeah, a year and a half ago.
So a bunch of hackers, coders, programmers coming together to tackle the issue of homelessness. And,
filling an arena
yeah,
to tackle the issue of homelessness, yeah.
And you recently received a grant for the implementation of that. So can you talk a little bit about what that hack was about and where it is today?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, first of all, thanks for having me on, and we're really excited to talk about the Samaritan Project coming out of Global Hack 6 and what it can do for not just the St. Louis region, what we believe potentially other communities as well across the country. And so the focus of Global Hack 6, our sixth flagship hackathon, was focused on homelessness. Like, how do we build capacity within our region's homelessness-focused agencies and, you know, give them better software, potentially better tools so that they can treat and work with their clients in a better, more efficient way. And so one of the prime issues that we heard back from some of these agencies that we work with during the hackathon was around duplicate data entry, right? That a lot of these agencies, they had multiple systems, sometimes up to two or three different databases where they'd have to put client information in and then put the exact same information into another system. A lot of times they would do that for government reporting. They may have one database they use for reporting through HUD for housing and urban development, and they would use another internal software system for their own reporting, their own services. And so they would often do this, you know, in front of the client that they're working with, you know, instead of actually talking to this other human being and getting to know their story. And so, you know, it seemed like, well, it should be very easy, right, from a technological standpoint to be able to enter in information into one system and have it populate to whatever system you have. And so that is really the core of Samaritan, this project that came out of Global Hack 6 and ultimately what the Missouri Foundation for Health grant will help us pilot and get toward the finish line.
How was it getting all of those organizations on the same page? Because we've seen this in multiple, I mean, when LaunchCode launched, for instance, going out to these companies who had their very rigid HR processes and convincing them to blow that up to get involved in the program. And so for these agencies, and they had their own policies and procedures, I'm sure, what was it like trying to convince them to get on board with this and be a part of the Global Hack experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of great relationship building that came through the hackathon and afterwards, too, in terms of building those relationships. I think both in terms of structure, and there are some things that were already in place for us within the homelessness industry here in St. Louis. So a lot of these agencies participate in what they call continuums of care. So St. Louis City has one, St. Louis County, St. Charles County, and some of the surrounding counties. Continuums of care are basically collaboratives that are typically mandated or set up through, you know, housing and urban development as a way to, you know, monitor and best kind of figure out the best ways to ultimately serve homelessness individuals. And it also serves as a funding mechanism for HUD, right, that they can, you know, write a check and ultimately, you know, the organizations that are part of that community continuum of care will receive, you know, funding for the housing that they provide, federally funded housing. And so I think that's both an opportunity, but a, you know, challenge for us moving forward is that, you know, there are these systems and, you know, there's politics and, you know, people's egos. But ultimately we found that, you know, just being able to figure out a way to explain technology in a way that that makes sense. You almost have to translate things, right? You can't talk tech all the time. You have to say, well, this, what is it going to do for me and for my clients, right? And I think that ultimately, once we were able to have those conversations and get it into a way that you know, you're able to add value to those organizations and to say, this is going to save you time and ultimately money, we're able to, you know, get their buy-in and understanding. But it's something, we do have a, 10-plus person advisory board that, provides us with a lot of guidance and support, and just with a lot of those relationships, just helps us navigate a lot of the communities that we seek to serve.
Now, you mentioned some of the agencies were involved in Global Hack 6. Is that one of the standard areas of practice, is that it's not just the technologist, but it's the end user and the agencies participate in this as well?
Yeah. So, and I think that's one of the things that makes, I think, the Global Hackathons a little bit different, in that, we really believe that, one ingredient, you got to have the technologists there. You need to have people who can write code and ultimately build the solutions over the 3 days. But we also provide subject matter experts who are available and on sort of like on call during the hackathon that, all the teams can access, right? So I can go and talk to the CEO of St. Patrick Center, Lori Phillips, was part of the hackathon in 2016, and ask them about, what is your model, right? What does that look like? What are the challenges that you face? So that team has the context to be able to build something that is actually informed by the community that they serve.
Well, we talk oftentimes in the startup world, like some of the lingo that gets thrown around is product market fit, right? And are you building something for the end user? And, for our listeners, the easiest way to think about it is, are you not the user, yet you're building it for somebody else? Like, right. It's really important to actually, heaven forbid, involve the person who's going to benefit from it or have their job impacted by it.
Right. No, and it's a common model. I think that, I shouldn't even say common, but I think a lot of technologists, particularly those that are working with civic technology, employ this philosophy of build with, not for. And so that looks different for a lot of different people. But for us, it's like, well, instead of this idea of if you build it, they will come. It's one of my favorite quotes from Field of Dreams, one of the best sports movie of all time. That aside, it's still a matter of, building it with the end user in mind and actually having them sit down and actually take you through that process. Like, what does it take? A lot of the teams that end up participating in Global Hack 6, like, they had no idea what the process was for someone who actually goes and gets a bed at a homeless shelter, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, they just show up and it's first come, first serve, right? And it's like, not really. This is how that works, and this is how software is involved in that process.
We're talking with Global Hack Executive Director Matt Minetti, and can you talk about, because we're talking about the product from Global Hack 6, maybe the transition that Global Hack underwent and the new focus that it has, and your next event is going to be on software that can help immigrants, for instance.
Yeah, so we're really excited to move forward with Global Hack 7. The decision was made to do this event every other year. It is a massive undertaking just to produce the hackathon itself, but we also wanted to provide, us an opportunity to really sit down and figure out what is going to get that technology that emerges from the hackathon to get to the next step, get to the next level. And we felt like running, that large hackathon every other year, or like every year, was going to really prevent us from doing that work and doing it well. And so in 2018, we announced the theme for Global Hack 7 last year. We considered a variety of different topics, but for a myriad of reasons, including a lot of the national conversations about, foreign-born individuals within the United States, we felt, compelled to really select that as the theme for this year's hackathon. So it'll be focused on not just immigrants. We're also looking at refugee communities and, different ways in which we can improve the foreign-born experience here in St. Louis and abroad through technology. And so we're working with a lot of the organizations that you typically associate with that type of work, Casa de Salud, International Institute, Mosaic Project, et cetera, to really provide us with, the context and background and figuring out what those challenges are actually going to be for those teams to work on in October.
Now, let me ask one more as we look at this as being Global Hack. What is who's traveled the furthest to participate? Do you know offhand? Because you've had people come from all over, I know at least all over the United States. Any international people coming in?
Yeah, we had teams from 8 different countries last year. I'm trying to go back. I definitely know that there was a team from Portugal, and that team actually won our Spirit Prize. They were just like super willing to help out some of the other teams, and they're like, hey, we don't even care if we get any cash prizes for this. Like, this is just, we're just so jazzed about being here. Team from Germany. So, you know, I think given the kind of international focus of Global Hack 7, I'm hopeful, and through a lot of our other partners and advisors that may be able to share this information with countries abroad, potentially, you know, some of the sister cities that St. Louis has, to see if they'd be willing to participate as well.
Awesome. Global Hack Executive Director Matt Minetti, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, you bet.
Thanks. And it's globalhack.org, right?
Globalhack.org. You know, we have tickets. You know, you can buy tickets to the hackathon on our website right now. We have an early bird special that's going until actually tomorrow, but you can still pick up tickets, you know, on our website and get access to what I think is a super cool event.
And the event's in mid-October.
Yep, October 12th through 14th. It'll be at Chaffetz Arena on the campus of St. Louis University.
Great. Well, thank you again for coming in.
You bet.
And Travis and I will be back with more Nothing Impossible after this.
Now, back to Nothing Impossible on Gangnam OX.
Continuing with our global theme here on Nothing Impossible, Michael Calhoun and Travis Sheridan with you, and we're joined on the line by Don Rubin of BioSTL, and their effort really that we're talking about today is Global STL, Travis.
It's so much bigger than just St. Louis, and Don, thanks for joining us. You just got back from a trip overseas. You're in Europe. Can you give us a little bit of an update on what Global STL was doing in Europe recently?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. So there's a lot going on connecting St. Louis to the rest of the world. And the emphasis in the last couple of weeks has been in Europe. And as you all know from previous discussions, this Global STL initiative is part of our bigger BioSTL program to build the innovation economy in St. Louis. And Global STL started about 4 years ago to really globally connect this ecosystem with a real focus on bringing innovators to St. Louis, bringing startups and other companies with leading edge technologies and innovations that can add real value to our St. Louis corporations, our hospitals, our healthcare systems, and leverage these partnerships between those innovators and the companies here in St. Louis to have those overseas companies put their U.S. base here in St. Louis and grow their North American business out of a headquarters in St. Louis. And we've had a lot of success early on in Israel with a number of agricultural technology, plant science companies who've put their base here, some digital health companies that have put their base here, and we're really growing that presence now in Europe. And our focus in the last couple of weeks has been both on France and the Netherlands. We were in France. I was actually not. My colleague Vijay Chauhan was in France alongside partners from the St. Louis Economic Development Partnership, a real public-private partnership to really grow St. Louis's image and St. Louis's connections in innovation in France, and particularly with a focus on plant science and agriculture, a real competitive strength that we have here in St. Louis.
And what were you? What about in the Netherlands? What were you doing up there?
Yeah, and so in the Netherlands, there were two parts to our visit to the Netherlands. First of all, I personally was invited, along with St. Louis's Deputy Mayor Linda Martinez, to represent St. Louis at an international city conference called the Startup City Summit, where they invited about representatives from about 90 different cities from around the world, many that everyone's heard of, many of the big cities, but also some smaller ones. Interestingly, the only three cities from the United States that were invited to the summit were New York, San Francisco, and St. Louis, and which is a nice feather in our cap. Why St. Louis? In part, it's because we've already been working with the Netherlands in a productive way to identify promising companies in agriculture and in healthcare to bring to St. Louis, and partnering with our big organizations here in St. Louis, working through the consulate to the Midwest that's based in Chicago. We've really developed a very nice partnership and a nice relationship. So they invited St. Louis to be featured as one of the U.S. cities. And it was a real nice opportunity for St. Louis to tell our story in front of innovation leaders from all over the world, including, it's not a surprise, many that have never heard of St. Louis or have know very little about St. Louis. So it was a very good chance to build some awareness about the good things happening here.
And Don, what is it that is causing, whether it's the Startup City Summit or the Burgundy region of France, they're now reaching out, they're being proactive and scouting out St. Louis. What is it that has caused them to take so much interest? And for instance, on stage at the Startup City Summit, what were people interested in hearing, or what did you think they needed to hear about St. Louis?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, the view of St. Louis around the world is pretty much a blank slate. It's pretty neutral. It's not negative, and it's not super positive. It's just people don't know very much about, they really don't know much about the middle of the United States in general. And we're able to tell the story, first of all, about all the wonderful assets that exist in St. Louis. So if we're talking to healthcare people, we can talk a lot about the great healthcare systems that are here, the big companies like Centene and Express Scripts, and some of the largest healthcare systems in the country are based here in St. Louis, as well as some of the top medical research that goes on in the United States happens here in St. Louis. If we're talking to plant scientists and agriculture people, we can talk about the strengths in agriculture in St. Louis, where we have more plant scientists than anywhere else in the world concentrated here in St. Louis, and so much expertise and wonderful world-class facilities like the Danforth Plant Science Center. So there's a lot to tell about the strengths in St. Louis that people are just not aware of. But there's also a nice story to tell about how St. Louis differentiates ourselves versus the big innovation centers on the coast like Silicon Valley or Boston. St. Louis has a much friendlier atmosphere and a more collaborative atmosphere than you'll find on the East Coast and the West Coast. And we work together very well in a way that we can give access to an entrepreneur to decision makers in our big organizations here in St. Louis in a very timely fashion that they just can't get access to on the East Coast or the West Coast. So combining our strengths, our strong assets, with our more small town atmosphere that allows people to build connections very quickly is a formula for success for a company looking to put their roots down in the U.S.
You know, Don, I was recently talking to an economic development professional out of New York City, and he said something that I think our listeners really need to hear because it made me laugh. He said, you know, in New York, as it relates to biotech, health tech, even plant science, he was so frustrated because New York City is flyover country.
That's right.
And it led me to think, you know, everybody is somebody else's flyover country. But for a region like St. Louis, when we look at plant science, life sciences, I mean, this is a global hub. As you mentioned, the number of PhDs and researchers out at the Danforth Center is second to none.
That's right. And the track record that we've seen now in attracting some leading companies, starting with Israel, has really become a calling card for us. So I met a very promising company in the Netherlands in agriculture technology that is very focused on biotechnology, gene editing, genomics in the plant space. And they knew a little bit about St. Louis, but when I listed the names of some of the Israeli companies that have put their U.S. headquarters in St. Louis, these are companies that they know and that they respect. These are not just some small backwater companies. These are the very best companies that have chosen St. Louis to bet on as their base location in growing their business in North America. And to list those companies to these folks who are just learning about St. Louis, our credibility just takes a quantum leap. And so it almost gets easier each time we do it because our track record gets stronger and stronger. It builds a resume for St. Louis.
And Don, we don't want to necessarily have glee over other cities' misfortune, but I do see, for instance, with the news about the company from, I think it was from Argentina, CTC, the sugarcane firm.
Brazil.
The Raleigh-Durham Business Journal wrote a story about how this was a fierce competition and St. Louis beat the Research Triangle. And then we've got Monsanto and Bayer, the merger completed, and Bayer's going to be moving from North Carolina to St. Louis, their crop science headquarters. What does it feel like to have these kinds of victories for the St. Louis region, these business victories?
That's right. You know, it's St. Louisans should feel really good about the momentum that our community has in building a reputation and becoming a magnet for these leading plant science companies, agricultural science companies. And this is a high growth area. As you know, our planet, our population grows, and the amount of arable land does not grow. We need to solve a lot of really important problems for the world, and there's a lot more people, innovators, that are focusing on plant science. There's a lot more investment capital focusing on plant science. It's a high growth area. It's going to be important for the foreseeable future, and St. Louis is positioned to be a real leader in that important area.
Well, Don, with the Bayer-Monsanto deal officially closing this week, any projections on what that means, bigger picture, for St. Louis?
Well, you know, I'm optimistic. I've said all along that losing a world headquarters is a blow for a city. There's no question about it. It's just the loss of prestige of having a world headquarters. So there will be some negatives for sure. But I'm hopeful that the positives will outweigh the negatives. We already see a significant commitment from Bayer in putting its agricultural crop science headquarters here in St. Louis, putting its overall North American headquarters here in St. Louis. As you say, moving people from North Carolina to St. Louis. So it looks like hundreds of jobs will be added to the base of plant science here in St. Louis. And because Bayer is a multifaceted company with huge interests in healthcare, there's a good chance that some of their healthcare could end up in St. Louis as well, which will be a completely new addition to our economy. So on the negative side of the ledger, we're going to lose the prestige of a world headquarters. But on the positive side, we could stand to gain a lot more science, a lot more research, and it could even be some new dimensions that we haven't had before.
Maybe some more flyers between Frankfurt and St. Louis that might justify a direct flight, perhaps even. Don Rubin, thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, my pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure to talk with Don Rubin. Coming up next, we're going to talk with Ginger Imster,
talking more about global economic development that impacts the St. Louis region. We'll be back on Nothing Impossible right after this.
Now, back to Nothing Impossible on KingMOX.
Welcome back. Michael and Travis with you in our studio here in St. Louis. We are right here in our hometown, but some folks from St. Louis have been traveling the world. We've already talked about Global Hack, and we talked with Don Rubin last segment from BioSTL and Global STL, and let's get a little bit more on this conversation.
Right. We're now joined by Ginger Imster, Vice President of Innovation and Entrepreneurship for the St. Louis Economic Development Partnership. And Ginger, you just got back from a trip to Burgundy, France. Is that correct?
Yes, in Dijon.
And Dijon, oh, wonderful. Can you tell us a little bit about, I understand it, a memorandum of understanding, an MOU was signed, hopefully to facilitate some cross-border commerce and interaction. Tell us a little bit about what the trip was all about.
Yeah, so the trip aligns with a number of multi-agency partners, World Trade Center Partnership, Global STL, and of course the French Consulate. And this trip was to deepen those relationships and add new through the lens of the Helix Center, which has a counterpart in Dijon called Agronov. And Global STL and the St. Louis Economic Development Partnership led the trade mission to ensure that we're connecting people both for research and commercialization, but also then for innovation and shared learning and talent. So the Global STL team signed an MOU with Agronov, and Sheila Sweeney, the CEO of the partnership, signed a memorandum of understanding with her counterpart, Martine, through their economic development agency there in Burgundy and Dijon. And the Helix Center, which we also own and operate within the partnership, also factored heavily because Agronov is to Dijon and Burgundy in France really what the Helix Center is to St. Louis, Missouri, and research elsewhere in the United States. So really exciting synergies and tremendous opportunity for, again, research, commercialization, and then shared commercial enterprise.
And Ginger, use your crystal ball. What does this look like in the future as this relationship matures?
Yeah, so, you know, I've got a great example. The trade mission that we had last November to Argentina, today, I hosted a gentleman that we visited with there, you know, just a few months ago, who now is ready to hire researchers in the United States to collaborate with his team in Argentina, and he wants them to be housed out of the Helix Center and working in collaboration with Benson Hill, arguably one of our most successful ag innovation companies in the region. And I think they're a perfect example of what we want to see more of in partnership with the French and Dutch companies and their academic and institutional counterparts. So in the near future, what I hope we see is an exchange of companies that are going back and forth between these markets. And as companies want to enter Europe, they do so in partnership with our French and Dutch counterparts. And as those French and Dutch companies want to enter the, you know, American market, that they come through St. Louis and hopefully through the Helix Center.
So from the Burgundy region of France to the Netherlands, Amsterdam, and also the plant science hub, Wageningen. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Yes.
Eindhoven. We had Eindhoven too.
Oh, awesome. Well, all right. So take us through the tour of that country, and from the Startup City Summit to meetings with some royalty, what happened in the Netherlands?
Yeah. So the Startup City Summit is in its third year in Amsterdam, and it's a very curated group of internationals that the Dutch invite to have conversations about innovation and entrepreneurship and startups. And this year, the emphasis was on mayors and deputy mayors. So the partnership worked very closely with the Dutch consulate to ensure that we had representation there. And we were fortunate enough to have Linda Martinez, deputy mayor and really the leader of the economic development efforts coming out of the in partnership with the mayor. She was there to represent St. Louis, and then Don Rubin with BioSTL was also invited this year. I attended in 2017 and found it to be a very thoughtful group of well-connected individuals who are extremely committed to getting their markets, functioning in a collaborative way, not just only within their own geography, but obviously around the world. So these meetings are really well done because of the quality of the people. And then for this trip this year, after Linda and Don left Amsterdam, our delegation began about a week ago on Tuesday, and that began with Wageningen and FNA Next. FNA Next is an event that is hosted there at Wageningen, which is the number one research institution, I think, for plant science in the world. And this food and agriculture FNA Next event brings together industry startups and investors to really talk about innovation in ag tech. And the urgency to that conversation is, of course, the anticipated population boom in 2050 of about 9 to 10 billion people. There's an enormous amount of pressure on industry to get yields up, to make those innovations environmentally sustainable, and to ensure that we're encouraging equitable access to food and equitable access to nutritious food around the world. So these are, again, agronomists, farmers, scientists, and machinists, and robotics specialists, microbiome specialists. It's just a fascinating group of people across different industries and private, public research institutions from around the world. And from there, we went then to Eindhoven, and Eindhoven has a tremendous technology university, technical and research university, and we were really there to see the food brain port, which is a tremendous testament to the Dutch commitment to innovation in food and food technology and sustainability. And so that whole trip to the Netherlands really encompassed three different cities, and also included His Royal Highness Prince Constantin. He was there for part of our conversation on Startup Delta and the renewed interest they have in returning to St. Louis to pick up on conversations that started here in December when the partnership hosted Anna Will Lucas for a really in-depth review of our biomedical, pharmaceutical, health, hospital, and ag tech communities, innovation communities. And so this was the first opportunity for the prince to really meet some of the same people that Anna Will has been communicating with, and our Dutch consulate has been so supportive of connecting back and forth between our geographies. And then in France was tremendous too, and this really started with the French delegation to Ag Innovation Showcase in 2017, our World Trade Center. and the French consulate in Chicago worked very closely to ensure that the French delegation had an exceptional experience when they were here, and they were visiting Boston, Silicon Valley, and St. Louis at that time. And they said again and again that the most significant and most substantial visits they had in 2017 were the conversations they had in St. Louis. So this was sort of our reciprocal trip to go back to their community and see what it is that they're doing. And again, visit Agronov and really be able to connect with the leadership there and at their various research institutions and then their economic development, our counterparts in economic development, to sign memorandums of understanding that really gave us this opportunity to formalize how we want to communicate so that no matter who sits in what seat, these relationships can go on and be of mutual benefit between the two countries.
Well, Ginger, what I really appreciate about the work that you and your colleagues are doing and your counterparts in other parts of the world is that, you know, the world has some really big problems, and those solutions aren't going to come from just one or two locations. Like, big problems Yep. require big brains and a big group of people working on it. And as you have these conversations, is that part of the narrative, the fact that you are able to serve, whether it's hunger or health, you're able to solve some of these world's biggest challenges by bringing different groups of people together?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the way that that gets summarized is innovation does not happen in isolation. So most of these organizations, whether they're economic development entities or they are research institutions or they are groups like StartLife in the Netherlands, which is really working with the entrepreneurs directly, all of these individuals in these positions of influence that can be points of connectivity between different people are functioning basically as honest brokers to get the best of the best and the brightest of the brightest in these different locales connected to each other so that that can accelerate what they're doing and be catalytic to their business development and most importantly to the research that we're so dependent upon them to commercialize so that they are bringing real solutions into the marketplace at this time when we know we've got to get yields up and we've got to make sure that the food is, you know, stable and that the whatever they're using to create the increase in production, that those methods are sustainable and that we can get this food to the people who need it the most by the time we see the world population boom in 2050. So, you know, this includes so much and different industry verticals. And if we in these relationships do our jobs well, then we should be seeing these catalytic sort of moments as research and investment is coming across these invisible lines, because we know that that's how we're going to, you know, accelerate this innovation right when we precisely need it the most.
All right, Ginger Emster, thank you so much for joining us on Nothing Impossible. And listeners, thank you for joining us this week. And remember, as you are out there traveling around or even in your own backyard, this is a global planet. So get connected to everybody.
Innovation is everywhere. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.